the babe. Babe with the power. Power of voodoo.
Voodoo.
Voodoo. Remind me of the babe.
I saw my baby.
And welcome, everybody, to episode 373 of RP Grinders. I'm your host, Frank Branches, alongside my trusty cohorts, Eric the Great, Breakman the Bold. The Frosty One himself is on assignment this week. Gentlemen, how
I'm working on a theory that they're actually split personalities.
Yeah, split personalities.
Yeah, because this is interesting, folks. Listen to this. Let me see. When we were first back from the new year, Frank was here and Moria wasn't. And then last week, Moria was here, but Frank wasn't.
And he was apparently unaware that we were doing a show, even though we told him during the pre-recording that we were going to do one anyway.
Right.
Exactly. And then this week, Frank is here, but he isn't. Maury isn't. So I'm starting to think your conspiracy theory may be correct.
Yeah. Either that or Mug just hates me. You know, that's what's one of those. Grippers in
like
chat.
Like a breath does stink.
Shit. Grippers in chat. Dungeon Busters in chat. We have a really excellent show on tap for you guys today. I don't normally get super excited for Grinders because, you know.
Hey!
Hold on. It's just us doing the news. And I get excited talking about, you know, talking with you guys, of course. But
and I'll have to talk about how he's been playing Marvel Puzzle Quest yet again.
Yeah. I was playing Marvel Puzzle Quest, yeah. But no, we got an interview. It's pre-recorded. Dungeon Buster's kind of upset. He thought it was going to be live. No, we couldn't get him live, but we had him earlier today, and I...
Actually, I could have asked him, but I didn't want to.
Yeah, no, it's okay. We pre-recorded an interview. It's about a half an hour in duration. It's a pretty good interview.
Dungeon Buster, I told people to send questions to Break, man. What happened?
It's all good. I think we covered a lot in the interview, Eric. We, you know, it was a good kind of... I asked him some pretty pointed questions, I thought. I could have been a little... a little more, I don't know.
One thing I wished I could have asked him is whether or not his stance on localization had changed over the years, because he used a lot of pop culture references in his older works.
No, he kind of alluded to that, Eric. Well, let's get into the interview, and then you guys decide I would ask the break and Eric, please mute your mics while
All right.
Present the interview with Vic Island. Here you go. Hey, Victor, appreciate you being on. The show's RP Grinders. I'm Frank Branches, along with Eric RPG. Super excited to have you on the show. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah. Let's get into it, Victor. We're kind of admirers of your style. I'm an old school, you know, kind of niche RPG player myself. Eric's been playing RPGs for a number of years, and I think it's kind of admirable how you've kind of fought through a lot of issues to get to where you are today. I mean, it takes a special kind of person to... deal with what you've had to deal with in the past and, continue fighting the good fight, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's super unique to the companies I've been at or to me personally. I just think that those other companies aren't necessarily in the same position of having close to absolute control over what happens within the company and then having to fight, you know, to get new things to happen because you have the chance. Like at a larger company, a corporation, that has 20, 50, 100, 200, 1,000 employees, you might have an idea, but then it's got to go through boards and boards and boards and, you know, it never happens. Whereas if I have an idea, pretty much I have the last word. I mean, in working designs, I had a partner that I had to talk things over with. But most of the time it was like, yeah, go ahead, just do it. And then I had to fight the fight to get it to happen. But in some of the other companies, there might be people within that want to do cool things that are just kind of stuck, you know, hamstrung because they can't get it through the approval process that, you know, a larger structure, corporate structure would require. So, you know, I'm fortunate in that I can pretty much do whatever I can dream as long as I can afford it.
Right.
But I'm unfortunate in that I don't have the protection of, you know, a large corporate structure that has, you know, large, you know, financial backing and lots of resources and favors to call in if things go bad. But, you know, because I'm retarded or something, I always try to push the envelope and it always makes trouble. I mean, always makes trouble. There's always something unforeseen because when you're doing something nobody else has done, it's just stuff comes up and then it becomes a big, you know, hassle. But it's in the end, it's worth it because people are like, wow, that was cool, that was neat, or that was weird. You know, we don't want to see that again, but it was cool one time. But, you know, I like the freedom of being able to do that kind of stuff, though not necessarily in the moment of when the problems come up and you've got to work through them.
Exactly. I was going to talk about the financial aspect of this business. You're obviously a passionate person. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here doing what you're doing. But there is a financial component. Business always seems to get in the way of a lot of creative ideas and things of that nature. What are some of the financial challenges that someone like yourself faces when trying to bring niche games over to the United States?
Just costs. I mean, costs have gone. When I started, 1989, 1990, like, for there's a great example. When I started in the beginning, licensing for music in a video game and voice in a video game, the Japanese music, Japanese voice, wasn't even an issue. It just was assumed you got it. If you wanted it, you could have it. Mm-hmm. Now, to add Japanese voice to a game, if you want to include it with the English dubbing, you're talking, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's insane how much more expensive it is now, mm-hmm, than, you know, 25, 28 years ago.
Well, what keeps you going then, Vic? I mean, you know, if it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to bring over a game to the United States, why do stuff like that? I mean,
oh, no, that's not for the game. That's just the voice. The game, you're talking multiple hundreds of thousands or millions. I mean, it's a crazy amount of money, very, very expensive. But, I mean, I love doing it, and I like offering something that very few other companies are interested in taking the trouble to offer. I mean, especially like with the physical editions. I mean, mm-hmm, digital is coming. We're not going to stop it. But as a collector, I dig physical games, and I dig physical games that have cool things. So I try to bring that to other people that are like-minded for as long as that's possible. It gets harder and harder, you know, like with the PSP games, you know, we're down to one factory in the whole world that makes them, and it's in Europe. So the lead time on just getting the UMDs is just ridiculous because you're down to one factory in the whole world that makes it, and it's probably one corner of that one factory.
Right.
But as long as it's possible, I want to keep doing physical games, not just for PSP, but for other platforms, mm-hmm, so that the people that enjoy holding a physical manual or the smell of opening a brand new game, that they have that opportunity. And if you want to buy digitally, that's great too. I mean, enjoy the game however you want to enjoy it. But mm-hmm, I'm going to offer digital and physical for as long as I can.
You know, you were one of the first people, if not the first, from the research that I've done, to like start like limited edition, you know, collector's edition type things with extra goodies in, which we've debated on RP Grinder several times. I happen to like a lot of the bonuses that people get. There are some out there that aren't as lucrative for a buyer or consumer, but I think over the years, you've kind of done things right and set the blueprint for what a good collector's edition should be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, where budget allows. There's been times when I've wanted to include a soundtrack like a Lundra, mm-hmm, and I couldn't because it was too expensive. Or when I wanted to add something that, you know, was just too expensive to add, or we couldn't get the permissions for it. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is, I mean, I approach the games that I release as a fan of the games. I think, you know, if I was buying this or saw it in the store or saw an ad for it, it was coming up, what would I want to see in that game? You know, like with the making ofs, especially, you know, nobody was doing making ofs when we did those. When we did the for Lunar, the two Lunars and Ark the Lad. Mm-hmm. But I thought, hey, it'd be really cool for people to see what goes on behind the scenes and to, you know, film in Japan, show the Japanese side. And so we did that. And then we went a step further and we included it as a movie with like chapters like you would find on a DVD mm-hmm. with the PS1 game. Nobody ever did that. And so, you know, since then, obviously, a lot of people have done it. But it was kind of a cool extra, and that's how that came about. Is I was like, well, what would I like to see? I'd love to see this behind-the-scenes stuff if I wasn't involved with that. But that's also how I choose, you know, the extras that I put in. And I try to keep the you know, like people are like, well, you should offer a physical or a deluxe version and a regular version. And I did that for Growlanzer, but we still sold a ton of the deluxe because I think people are happier with a reasonably priced deluxe pack that everybody gets. You know, so it's not just mm-hmm. a super premium and then just an average.
Right.
So if we can offer it to everybody at a you know, $10 over the normal going price, and you get a whole bunch of great stuff that would normally cost you $100 if it was a limited thing, I think it's a good value for everybody. But I know some people would rather just get just the game only. I don't know who they are, but I know they're out there.
Yeah.
You know, but like I said, that's why I like, you know, choosing those deluxe items carefully and doing. And I also like to do stuff that other publishers haven't done, but not like crazy stuff. I mean, like the digital deluxe editions you see now where you get the deluxe pack full of stuff and a code. I think that's just wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just wrong on so many levels. And I don't think I would ever do that.
Well, there have been some games, some big titles that I won't mention for fear of not getting those interviews that you don't even get a game period with the quote deluxe edition, and I just find that atrocious.
The Panzerhood collection from Bethesda's Wolfenstein comes to mind.
They don't include the code either? Digital code?
No.
No, it was just a swag-only type of deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, see, that goes beyond wrong. I don't know what the definition of that is, but that's past wrong.
It's past wrong. I love it. Past wrong. What about Kickstarter, Victor? You caught some criticism for doing a Kickstarter for Class of Heroes, which I felt was kind of unwarranted. Some people felt that you were asking too much on that particular Kickstarter, that you didn't even get a game until you donated, I think it was like, what, $59-$60. But in thinking about it, I mean, the fact that you're getting a PSP game in itself right now would be kind of a bonus, I would imagine, you know, for people, old school fans of the PSP RPGs.
Well, I mean, really the only problem with the Class of Heroes Kickstarter was that it was a PSP Class of Heroes game, and there wasn't as much knowledge and familiarity with it. And the people that were familiar with the series, a lot of them, their only exposure had been Class of Heroes 1, which was just really badly localized, and mm-hmm. so it wasn't a fun experience, and they didn't know that 2 was substantially better. But you know, I think the goal for that was like $500,000, maybe. I think it was to make it happen, and that was really not that expensive. And people are like, oh, it's $500,000. It's like, well, there are a lot of costs built in here, and with the campaign, there was a lot of pretty crazy premiums. I mean, I had like a music box in there, like custom for mm-hmm. Class of Heroes, and a bunch of like really nutty stuff that nobody had ever done and nobody will do, because it would have been a ridiculous amount of work to get them out. But mm-hmm. I was willing to do it. So, I mean, I don't think the price was that high, but I think most people were just like, well, look, the game's coming anyway, so this isn't really a referendum on will the game come out. We're getting the game, so if we're getting the game anyway, why should we support this? Mm-hmm. And I can see that, but, you know, honestly, it probably is best that didn't finish, because it would have taken a lot of time and energy beyond what it took to get the game out to fulfill those crazy premiums. I mean, I had some really nutty stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And that's really the kind of thing with Kickstarter. My sort of idea on that has come around to the point where I'm just like, look, you know, if there's support for a game, we'll just do the game And then put up the poll like we've been doing where people can say whether they want to do a physical version with pre-sales. And that works out great for us because you're going to get a cool game with some cool extras. But I'm not going to spend a crazy amount of time doing manufacturing fulfillment on very limited items for those very limited upper tiers.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about localization. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you at least a question or two about localization. Our co-host, Moria Mug, is a localization kind of translator expert. I can't remember the games that he worked on, but what are the challenges in getting a game localized?
Probably the biggest challenge for us is just because I'm kind of a control freak on making the stuff look good. Mm-hmm. You've seen a lot of localizations, or not a lot now, but in the old days there was a lot. Now there's still a few currently, but where they don't take the time to do like a cool font or do proportional spacing. They'll do monospace characters that are all spaced out goofy on the screen. They don't look good. Or they try to cram like a really long translation of a name into like a really short space, so they have to abbreviate stuff heavily. Mm-hmm. When we do it, we try to reprogram the screen so that it displays the English better. Mm-hmm. It accommodates the size of text needed without having to abbreviate too much.
Yeah.
Like with Summon Knight 5, there was a screen where you get your skills, and they had the name of the skill was on the top, and then on the bottom they had a whole bunch of wasted space with the locks, with the five levels of skill that were locked, and they just used up a ton of space on the bottom, and the top space was constrained because you didn't have room to put the really full skill name. So we rearranged that screen so that the top line could have a really long skill name that read well in English, and the bottom line we just shortened up the little padlocks that show which ones were locked and unlocked, which didn't make any difference at all to the player. It still gave them all the information they needed. They could see what they needed to see, but the English was displayed well. Mm-hmm. So that's challenging because a lot of times you'll get like, two character kanji and it has like a 5-word translation. So it's like, how do you get that to get on the screen because you don't abbreviate it too crazy? Sometimes with localization, my sort of philosophy of localization, which a lot of places have come around to, there's still some hardcore that are like, we want more of a translation, transliteration of the original Japanese. We don't want any sort of flavor, no color, no nothing. We just want it straight. For me, that's boring because they read badly. Japanese writers in general, there are some good ones, but in general, they're not nearly as awesome as some people think they are. And so the text sometimes reads very, very dull when it's translated straight. And a lot of times it might be maybe cool in the original Japanese, but it comes out very dry in English.
Right.
So my thing is to get the idea of what the person wanted to get across, the feeling, and then rewrite it. Because if you try to just make it read well, it almost always comes across as dry. So that's challenging. Some people don't like that. They would prefer not to have that. And then also if there's like a, hi, welcome to, X town, we're having fun today. When you have that message 10 times over in a town, that's boring. Yeah. So I'll keep one of those and then I'll rewrite the other 9, give people something interesting or funny or fun to say. Mm-hmm. Because there's no excuse for having this 10 people saying, hi, welcome to X town. I mean, just lazy.
I think that you should start using Comic Sans myself, for font on all your stuff.
People hate Comic Sans.
You're making me cough.
I love it.
I just got over a cold, so
I just killed.
Yeah,
killed
so
Victor,
no, not Comic Sans. Class of Heroes, we're using Shrewsbury, which is kind of a cool looking font. I try to customize the fonts for each game. So like whatever the feel of the game is, I try to give them a different font so that each game looks a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Instead of just using a standard, sans serif font or something, not Comic Sans, you're not going to see.
Dang, I tried, everybody. I tried.
Yeah.
You mentioned Summon Knight 5. Summon Knight's been around for a while. I love the Summon Knight games. Summon Knight 5, how hard was it to get that game over? What were the challenges in bringing Summon Night 5?
Lots of challenges, very hard. The difficulty level was 11 for sure. It was tough, and honestly, if it wasn't on PSP, I don't think it would have been 11. I think difficulty would have been impossible, like infinity, because I think the only reason we got that title is we were interested in the title, and it was on PSP, and there was literally nobody else that wanted it because it was on PSP. I liked the series. I wanted the title. The production value was really one of the better ones on the PSP, so I was like, I have to get this title. Fortunately, somebody that worked at Namco US used to work at Working Designs, so that was my in to kind of like say, hey, is this even possible? And then that sort of started the ball rolling. But even once the ball was rolling, the negotiation process, the contract process took over a year. I mean, we got the source. That was another difficult thing. We got the source code, which you almost never get. We often get it because we're like, look, we've done it with these other big companies. And after we talk for a while, we can usually get the source to do it ourselves because that gives us a lot more control. Mm-hmm. But we had the source. We had the text. We were doing the localization on an understanding of this is what the contract is going to be while we waited for the contract to be finalized. And I literally stopped that project three times in a year because the contract was always imminent, but it never would happen. And then I was like, well, look, this isn't going to happen. There's no sense in wasting all this time doing this localization that we may never even be able to release. So three different times in that process, I literally stopped production essentially. So, you know, people are like, well, yeah, you had that for so long in localization, but yeah, a substantial amount of that time we weren't working on it. We had stopped it because we thought that we kind of give up hope that it was going to happen. But it finally did happen. You know, we got their happy ending and everything got out. And, you know, it turned out well. It's a cool game and cool series. And we really, 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 Infinity would like to do Summon Night 6. So we're hoping that people spread the word on 5 so we can, you know, sort of get the clout and the credit to be able to do 6.
I was going to talk to you about that too. Are there any dream projects that you would like to, you know, kind of like bring over, even if they will never happen? Is there something on your mind that you would just, you know, you would do anything to get it localized over here?
Well, I don't like to say too much because, you know, unlike the old days when nobody was localizing stuff, now people are listening for, you know, the obscure weird thing that's really awesome that nobody knows about. So I try not to say too much about the games that are on my sort of wish list. I mean, I will say things like Idolmaster. I think Idolmaster could be cool if done right. So I would like to get a real Idolmaster, not like the iOS one, but it's just basically just the mini games. I'd like to see like a full Idolmaster where you have the, you know, the simulation and the groups and the competitions and all that stuff. But, you know, that one would be, I think, a huge headache just because of the music licensing. Because at that one, I'd want to keep all the Japanese music because I'd want to do it as a U.S. producer going to Japan and getting that assignment. So the player would be the U.S. producer. Because the game puts you in the role of producer, but it puts you in the role of a Japanese producer. Mm-hmm. I would like to change the story so that you're a U.S. producer going over there, which would give a reason for all the stuff to be in Japanese, all the songs to be in Japanese. And you're sort of thrown into this crazy culture, and it could be really fun with you know, the person growing as they sort of understand Japanese culture with the player. I'd like to do that game. That would be fantastic. I would love to do or be involved with another Lunar, but not a remake, and maybe not an after story, but more of a prequel. You know, like I'd love to find out, you know, Galleon's master race of reptile people or whatever. I'd love to hear all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned iOS. My son, you could tell the gap in generations. Like, I grew up with the Game Boy Advances and, you know, the first Nintendo, and even before that, Atari and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But iOS, I think I hate that type of mobile gaming without the feel of like a PSP or a DS, something of that nature. Like, I just can't stand the fact that you have to move around basically with your thumb on the screen. Like, I obviously would prefer the buttons. Like,
can't see the screen.
Yeah, it's obvious that the newer generation is definitely headed more and more in that direction. How do you feel about that?
I guess I'm glad I'll be dead soon. I don't know. Like I say, I also do not get the appeal. I mean, I will play a mobile game here and there, but it's basically just a time killer. Mm-hmm. I have a real problem with playing an actual real game, you know, quote unquote real game on iOS. I love the platform. I love the time killer games, but I'm not, you know, that's not my first choice for, it's not my last choice actually for playing, you know, like a game like an RPG or something.
Yeah.
I can't stand the touch navigation. I can't stand using a simulated D-pad. I don't like any of it.
Yeah, neither do I. I just think that the millennials have it all wrong. They got things backwards, man. It's weird to me. But the PSP in particular is a great system. It was a great system for RPGs in general. And I'm glad that there's people like you, you know, still dedicated to bringing out, you know, at least a game here and there out on that system, because I think it was just an underrated, just awesome system.
Well, I mean, I don't think it was necessarily even underrated. I think it would have gotten a lot more support had the piracy not gone insane on it. I think a lot of publishers just would not put their AAA stuff on it after a while because there was just too much piracy. And I totally understand that. But, yeah, it kind of killed the system. And the crazy thing about it is actually, for me, for holding it, it's actually more comfortable to hold than a Vita.
Yeah, I would say
A Vita is not quite as comfortable as a PSP to hold. My hands will cramp sooner on a Vita than they will on a PSP.
Yeah. I had to get, like, this little peripheral just to put space in between my hands so it didn't hurt so much after a while.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. The actual hand feel is better on a PSP, I think. It's crazy. But I like the screen on the Vita.
Hey, Eric had a couple of questions about kind of the future. What you're planning on the future. Eric, did you want to ask your question?
Yeah, I was asking whether or not you'd investigated looking into platforms on the digital space, because, like, I know Steam's very popular and a lot of people like games on there, and a lot of visual novels have come out lately. So I was wondering if you'd be interested in those type of games or shmups or any of the like Dojin Circle stuff.
I'm aware of it, obviously. I would like to maybe try some stuff on it, but right now I'm focused strictly on console and handheld. I do think, you know, some of the stuff we're talking about with publishers, I think there's a potential for some of the console stuff to end up on Steam. So we may end up going that route. But starting on Steam right now, no, I've got way too much console and handheld stuff. Handheld stuff we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So that's probably going to happen anytime in the near future for Steam only. But the stuff we're doing on console or talking about doing might end up on Steam eventually anyway.
Yeah. What is there anything of note that you got in the works that, you know, maybe you want to share with our audience, or is that all under wraps right now?
Yeah, it's all under wraps right now. I mean, you know, Class of Heroes 3 is the next thing coming out. That's PSP. And we'll have, once we actually finally do really ship Summon Knight 5's physical version, mm-hmm. then we can get Class of Heroes 3 going. I just think it's kind of bad form to be putting up a poll for the next game. We haven't got the physical of the last game out.
Yeah.
So we're just waiting on those UMDs, and then we can get that shipped, and then we can actually get the engine ramped up for Class of Heroes 3. But it's actually really close because it's quite far along. So you know, I think once people see the actual game, they'll be surprised at how basically it's almost done.
I had another question about localization.
Go ahead,
okay.
Eric.
We were talking about localization costs earlier, and I was just I'm in the middle of playing Summon Knight 5. The review will be up whenever I actually finish the game. Hopefully it's sooner rather than later. But
let's just take a shortcut, 5-star.
Yeah. I'm liking it, but I did notice that the game lacks voice acting, and I'm pretty sure the budget played a role into that.
Yeah, the cost to add – well, cost to dub it would have been a lot. Cost to add Japanese as well would have been more than we made on the game.
Mm. Yeah,
we're talking the gross sales of the game. The voice acting would have cost more than all of that.
Is that just a matter of greed, or is it just a matter of that's how it is now? Like, you know.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you know, before old days, grandpa time, you know, back in the 90s, there was really no structure for that kind of thing. But now there's, you know, unions and there's managers and there's agents and there's, you know, people that own various mechanical rights and performance rights and things like that. There's just so many layers involved that, you know, I don't know this for a fact, but I personally believe that the actual voice actors themselves don't see a whole lot of these license fees. I think most of it goes to the administration in the middle. But the fact is that administration has pumped up the costs substantially. I mean, they're just – they're out of control. They're crazy. You know, and so that's why I've said to people, like, look, I understand you want this. I'm more than happy to provide it. But to be able to offer even dubbing, you know, which is for us is cheaper because we're doing it on our side. So those fees are less, even though we have to pay for the production. Even dubbing, we have to get in the 25,000 unit range before we can do that. You know, dubbing plus Japanese voice, we're, you know, probably 35,000-40,000 units before we can start to offer that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's so expensive that even if you were just to do a digital-only release, it'd still be too expensive.
Yeah, because they don't care how you release it. It's just a license. And the thing is you're not paying per unit. You're paying a per-unit minimum guarantee. So you're paying up front a large amount of money based on units you may never sell.
That's interesting.
So I mean, it's super, super, super – and also another thing too is – there's a trend in Japan that's been going on for quite a while where they get up-and-coming music groups or up-and-coming voice actors or up-and-coming singers. So when they get them, they're inexpensive. But if they become popular, by the time they get to the U.S. or, you know, the game gets to the U.S., they're now super expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that. I just finished Trails of Cold Steel by Exceed, and they did good work on that game. But as far as I could tell from the Falcom side, their budget – they're a small company, so their budget was really small. So they couldn't even afford to pay for a lot of the voice acting for the main character, Reen.
Yeah.
And he is – most of his extraneous dialogue that is in the main storyline parts is just complete absent.
Yeah. Like I say, the budget thing is just – it's crazy. It's players, I don't think, have a real strong grasp on how out of control the costs have gotten on the licensing side. But like I say, you know, we just work around it. You know, I think getting the game out is the number one most important thing. And then if we can add extras like voice, we'll do that. But I think as we grow the company and get it back to sort of working designs level releases, working designs – a small release for us was like 50,000-60,000 units. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to have 50,000 or 60,000 units now. You know, for us, it's, you know, we get 5, 10, 15,000 units. So we're growing as we go. And if we can get it back to working designs, you know, minor project levels of 40,000 or 50,000 units, then we can start to offer those again and, you know, sort of make everybody happy.
Yeah.
You know, and there's another game we're doing after Class of Heroes 3 that we're going to probably offer that option with, you know, we'll have a, you know, the normal poll and the direct sale. But we'll say, look, if you can get to this point in sales, then we can offer Japanese voice. Mm-hmm. So the people, you know, you're going to get it anyway, but if you can get to this level, then you're going to also, we'll be able to afford the licensing to do the Japanese voice.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, but that way it puts it back in the player's court. Where look, it's like if you want this and you think there's demand for it, you have to tell your friends to get this supported, because you know unless you get to that level, we can't pay for it.
Yeah. All right, Victor, I'm going to ask you a couple of kind of fun questions here. What's your favorite RPG of all time?
Probably Lunar.
Lunar, that's a great game.
Yeah. Sega CD one actually.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you playing now?
I just like the story direction in that. I mean, the production value of the PS1 one had some cool things, but they took out some things in the PS1 one and changed some things that I think the Mr. Sega CD told it better as a storyteller.
Mm-hmm. What are you playing nowadays?
I can't tell you because there are games we're going to probably be doing. That's the thing is as we get more and more games to evaluate, I end up playing almost nonstop the games we're looking at doing instead of just random games. So I get to play some games occasionally or pieces of games, but if I'm playing a game, it's usually one that we're interested in actually publishing.
Yeah. I have to tell you, Victor, you're wrong on your greatest game of all time. It's Dragon Quest VIII.
Oh, honestly, this is where I'm out of step with like a lot of people, is Dragon Quest and also Final Fantasy. I played Final Fantasies. I have some of them. I have a very vivid memory of Final Fantasy VI.
I knew it.
That released as 4 here?
Yeah.
No, it was 3.
Yeah,
wait, which is the one that starts out with the mechs that are in the snow at the very beginning?
That's 6.
That's 6, yeah. Okay, so I was in Shinjuku in Tokyo. It was raining, and that game had come out, and they had one of the stores right outside Shinjuku Station. I walk in this little corridor, and they have like, you know, TVs with like stuff taped all over. It looks like crap. Mm-hmm. But the TV in the middle was playing that intro, and I was like, I have to have that game. That looks amazing.
Yeah.
And then I found out it was Final Fantasy, so I ended up playing it. And like I say, I enjoy some aspects of Final Fantasy, but I'm not like a huge, crazy Final Fantasy fan. Mm. And I'm kind of the same with Dragon Quest. I mean, I'm more into – I usually end up picking up like the weird RPGs and getting into like the weird stuff like, you know, 3x3 Eyes or or some, you know, just offshoot, crazy, offbeat games rather than sort of the you know, huge like event games like Final Fantasy or Dragon Quest or something.
Yeah, I got one more question, Victor, and I don't know if Eric has anything else for you, but if you were to play a non-RPG, what would you be playing?
A non-RPG. You mean like of the current games?
Yeah, of anything, you know, past.
If it's not RPG, it'd be a shooter, because that's my second favorite genre is shooters. So I'm not a huge fan of like the bullet hell direction, but you know, just a fun, you know, goofy shooter like the Death Smiles, I thought was an. It had bullet hell elements, but it was kind of whimsical and fun. I really dug that game a lot. But yeah, shooters, I play shooters, RPGs. It was an RPG, but Witcher was awesome. The Witcher 3, that was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, any award show that is giving out awards for RPG and The Witcher doesn't win is a fraud.
Yeah.
I mean, that game is ridiculous. The amount of dialogue, the amount of scenarios, the amount of voice acting – done well. I mean, it's not crappy voice acting. I'm like, these guys are in Poland and they're doing this? This is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing, amazing accomplishment. I can't believe what they've done. And I've heard, like, I think there was a award show where I think somebody, Metal Gear Solid got Game of the Year or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, that wasn't even a complete game, but Witcher should have totally won that because I'm just tremendously impressed with the work they did on that game.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great game for sure. We have a healthy crowd that really dug that game for sure. Eric, do you have anything else for Mr. Ireland here?
I would say that if you were to pursue Summon 8-6, would you be more into trying to get the voice acting in the game?
Well, I mean, if we can get enough support for 5 to get sort of the credibility to do 6... I think 6 naturally will have more support. So I would think that, you know, if 6 were released in the U.S., it would sell, you know, high tens into the hundreds of thousands of units. So I think it would be possible to do it. Because, I mean, it's a PS4 and Vita co-release. So, I mean, I could see where that kind of game could generate substantial numbers. Yeah. That would not be a direct sale. I mean, if we were able to do that, that would have to be a retail release as well as a direct. You know, we'd have to do a hybrid or something because, you know, it would do pretty big numbers, I would think. And also, there's kind of a dearth of those kind of games. You know, the kind of game that is, and the production value that has. I mean, the trailers, like Jump Festa trailer was amazing. So, yeah, I could see that doing really well, and I could see it doing well enough that you could afford to do voice, but. Let's get those Summon Night 5 sales up so we can do it.
Yeah. Everybody buy it, please.
Yeah, everybody
yeah,
buy Summon
Night 5. Please.
I got a real quick question. It escaped my mind. I was going to ask you about something to do with Summon Night, but whatever.
It's gone. it's in the pirate screen?
Yeah, there you go. Oh, no, I don't have anything else, Eric. Do you have any other questions?
I can't really think of any, actually.
Yeah, was there anything else you wanted to, you know, tell the audience? You know, go buy Summon Night 5, obviously.
Yeah, that's really the biggest thing. Is just, you know, please support Summon Night 5. Oh, also the patch for Summon Night 5 that fixes the acquire skill bug, that should be out pretty soon on PSN. So that'll be a basically a replacement download. You delete the game you have and download it again. and that'll fix that, and it'll also fix up some typos and stuff that some of the fans have sent in, which is great. We really appreciate that.
Hmm. Yeah, are you getting good feedback from the fans on everything? You know,
yeah, everybody seems to like it. The reviews have been pretty good. You know, 7s and 8s, so that's right about where I expected. You know, maybe 8, 8.5. So it's maybe right in the ballpark of what I expected for the game. And I think, you know, some people are knocking it because it's a PSP game, so they're dinging it, you know, half a star or a star just because of that. But, you know, if you take out that bias, yeah, the reviews are falling exactly where I expected. And people are digging it. And the fans, especially who buy it and, you know, play through once and then realize, holy crap, I've got a whole other playthrough as another character, plus, you know, 14 endings that I want to go for everything, are realizing how much content is really in that game. Because it's deceptive. When you play through it, you think, oh, you know, that was a decent amount of text, but it wasn't a huge amount. But then you realize that there's actually 10 different variables on a lot of the conversations, mm-hmm. you know, 2 characters, 4 crosses, and 2 bonus characters. Yeah. And you realize how much text there is potentially in the game.
Yeah. All right. Victor Island from Gaijin Works, Summer Night 5, go out and get it, support it, so maybe we can get Summer Night 6 and some other projects that are underway over at Gaijin Works. Mr. Island, it is a pleasure. Thank you very much for being on RP Grinders. We really appreciate the time.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. That's the interview, guys. I hope you all enjoyed it. Hey, joining us now is the Frosty One himself. Mug, what is up? And we lost Mug. Great. That's awesome.
No, you didn't.
Oh, there he is. Mug.
Yeah, everything was muted, so I had to...
Mug made it to... Yeah. Oh, I think he purposely wanted to avoid the interview because he probably raged.
No, actually, I wish I could have been in on it. I had some questions I would have enjoyed asking.
Yeah.
Not even asshole questions.
I tried to do my best with the interviews, and there's so much more.
I almost was willing to do it myself.
Yeah, there was
Frank was luckily.
No, I think he would be. There were a few questions. It's like, ah, damn, he's not asking any of the, you know, he's not asking anything about it. It's like, at least what I heard, you didn't ask him like really much about his translation philosophy or anything like that. I would have enjoyed getting into that with him.
I wanted to get into that, Mug, but the interview was like already over half an hour, so I was like, you know, we got to get this shit going. And you know. I mean, we could have went down a ton of rabbit holes in that interview. I wanted to ask him about Sony and Microsoft and just a bunch of shit.
I think the way I would have approached it is like, you know, it's like with us today is Victor Ireland, so and a pivotal figure in the, you know, history of bringing games to the U.S. And I think he could be, you know, described by most as divisive. Like, people either love him or hate him.
Yeah, there's no in between. In between.
And, well, the thing is, like, I kind of do sit at that in between. It's like I don't, you know, I think he, you know, his philosophy as far as localizing games, I liked his idea for what he was talking about with Idolmaster.
Yeah.
Where you know, just changing things around to make it, you know, to make it make sense. It's like I understand that. I mean, I can see where a lot of people would have problems with it, but I think that it's a cool idea. And it maybe do something kind of like what they did with, what was it, Elite Beat Agents was very different from its Japanese version. But it's still, you know, still the same core gameplay, but the songs and the actual storyline or whatever of it and the look of it were different.
Yeah.
The only thing, but when I was talking about like, okay, I don't like that this line repeats, so we're going to change 9 of them. You know, I was like, I'm not so sure. It's like, I'm not a big fan of just... I mean, if you're going with a concept like he did, with, like he was talking about with the Idolmaster thing, you know, then that's one thing. But just as like, I'm not sure about, you know, I don't like that these lines repeat. I'm going to just add in random shit.
Yeah, I understand that, but I understand his point of view too. You know, it's
no, like, I'm not saying it's like I see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
I can see why he would feel that way. It's like I think that's a bridge a little too far for me.
Yeah, I understand.
It's like, you know, and it. At one point in time, I was just like, I fucking hate Victor Ireland. He keeps doing all this, you know. And like, it wasn't even that, like, you know, I agree with him that, you know, like, you don't want to have a strict dry translation because that's fucking boring and it looks and sounds awful.
Yeah.
But I do think that you can go too far in the other direction. It's like I'm probably like if you have your average Weeaboo is a 1 and Victor Ireland a 10, I'm probably around a 7.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I enjoyed the interview. I know he's super divisive. I was happy that he did.
Yeah. No. It was. I mean, what I heard. I mean, I think I heard most of it, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I wish he could have co-hosted. That would have been more cool.
Yeah. That would have been fun, I think.
It's hard to get people more than – dude, you know these interviews are set up for like 10 or 15 minutes, and I always –
Oh, yeah. They inevitably run long.
I always can get them to talk in the 30-minute range, even if I get celebrities. I had Irony Singleton on one time and his publicist, and the interview was scheduled for like 10 minutes, and it ended up being like 45 or something.
How long was the Kaufman review supposed to go?
Oh, that one was only supposed to be about 10 minutes too, man.
Yeah. How did you end up getting Victor on the show?
You know what? I credit Eric. Eric got this interview. He worked super
hard. I asked for a review code for Summer Night 5, and I figured as long as I'm asking you, I wonder if we could set up an interview for my podcast, because I mentioned that I write and as well as do a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys need to tell him he's welcome to come back on any time. If he wants to, like, you know, maybe co-host or come back on.
I'll give him a link.
I think what Break is saying here, if you could get Victor Ireland to fill in for me next week, that would be great.
Yeah, I got this thing. I wasn't going to mention it, but now that it was brought up, you know.
Yeah. Hey, Dungeon Bush says it was really solid interview. I mean, I'd agree with everything that Working Designs has done, but I'll give them credit where credit is due.
I mean, it's like I actually would have liked to ask him, you know, what do you think about companies like Xseed or what's it, Axis Games? I mean, they're kind of, you know, Xseed in particular is kind of the Working Designs of the modern, you know, like of modern games.
Mm-hmm. They kind of fulfilled his role after they left.
Yeah,
they almost immediately came on the scene after he left.
You know what? Once Eric asked or mentioned Xseed, I thought we were going to be shut down after that. But no,
like he's going to Charlie Sheen and just walk off the shit.
Oh, yeah.
My mortal enemy.
Yeah. Hey, all right,
this interview is done.
This interview is done.
Hear some break in the background.
I mean, they're kind of following in his footsteps.
Yeah. Okay, guys, I don't know if you heard the intro music at the beginning, guys, but that was obviously David Bowie from Labyrinth, Magic Dance. We'll be talking about that obviously a little bit later. Power of the Babe, you know, shit like that. Let's get through this news real quickly, guys. I don't want to get into any discussions about these news. Let's just read maybe a quarter of the story or something. Let's just get the feel of it, move on, because we got tons of cover. I'll start with the first story from everybody's favorite, Silconera, romantic visual novel Sepia Tears, available for free on Steam. Scarlet String Studios has released its romantic visual novel Sepia Tears on Steam for Windows and Mac. Even better than that, it's completely free to download. So there you go, guys. Go check that out for free on Steam for Windows and Mac.
Yay for free.
Yeah. All right. Eric, you want to read the next story?
And it's Mac, so you can play it too.
Yeah,
but the next story is from Gamatsu. Story of Seasons, Good Friends of Three Villages. That name's obviously going to change when Xseed brings this over.
That sounds very translated.
Yeah.
Anyways, new Bokujo Monogatari coming to Nintendo handheld. It says Marvelous announced Story of Seasons, Good Friends of Three Villages for the 3DS in the latest issue of Famitsu, and it's the 20th anniversary entry, and includes three villages, Lulu Coco Town, Tsuyukusa Village, and West Town, each with their own culture, bride.
Did you say Tsuyukushi Village?
Yeah.
you're channeling Break, man. Yeah. You're channeling Break, man. You're brand.
I guess the update is early 2016 for Japan, so
yeah.
There you go. All right.
It says development's currently 80% complete, and release is planned for early 2016. So if it's 80%, then they're gonna do some serious crunch time. There's only a few months left in the first quarter.
Yeah. Dungeon Buster says, "Greetings, I am a good friend from the second village." That's awesome, man. All right, Coochie Village, man. What do we have next?
Kusa, not Kusi.
I'm sorry. You need to warn me.
Yeah. Go ahead, Coochie Village.
Coming from Gamatsu, NIS announces Rose and Old Castle of Twilight for PS Vita from the director of HTOL pound sign NIQ.
You're not saying it right. It's HTOL hashtag meek.
HTOL hashtag meek. The latest.
It's actually pronounced bullshit, but okay.
The latest issue of Dengeki PlayStation this week reveals Rose and the Old Castle of Twilight for PS Vita from Nippon Ichi Software. Due out on April 28th for 3,980 yen in Japan. Obviously, Jesus Christ. It's for 3,000 yen in America. Really? Yeah. Awesome. The game is directed and features character design by Hato hashtag Niki.
Yeah.
The Firefly Diary director Masayuki Furuya. not close, huh?
All right. So there you go, decent. Man.
It follows the flow of the Firefly Diary and blah, 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 blah. Okay, let's move on.
Hey, this game's basically Cryon, but 2D.
There you go. All right, Mug, next story.
All right, please. Coming to us live from Destructoid.com.
It's alive. It's alive.
It's alive, yes. Shut up, Breaker, I'll kill you. Because it's Odinsphere, Leiftrasir. And whoever's writing these news stories can't spell Leiftrasir, but I can't really blame him for that. He keeps leaving out the R. It has a June release in North America. Scrumptious, which is one of the headings underneath the image for some reason. Atlas is launching Odinsphere, Leiftrasir, this week in Japan, but there will unsurprisingly be more waiting involved for the Western release. The 2D action RPG is hitting PS3, 4, and Vita. Holy crap, Vita. In North America on June 7th, 2016.
Hey, that's cool.
The Japanese PSN has a demo of the game out right now.
Ooh, oh, cool. Nice, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of a Vanillaware stuff is kind of cult, you know, niche titles, but it's, you know, it's fairly big for,
yeah,
you know,
I would say so. I like that.
There's another Vanillaware title coming out this year.
Yeah, I mean, Vanillaware is not AAA stuff. You know, it's not like the big, you know, well, we're Ubisoft and that kind of shit.
I wish, because they put out some great games, man.
I'm looking forward to seeing what 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim is going to be like. And it's called Aegis Rim as its subtitle. I wonder if that's a subtle reference to Pacific Rim.
Mm. Probably not.
Dungeon Buster says,
you're fighting giant monsters with robots, though.
Dungeon Buster said,
okay, maybe it is.
Dungeon Buster said,
and I just one a little aside, random little comment. Yeah. I miss the you know, just since I brought up Ubisoft, I miss the Ubisoft of the PS2 era when you know, they put out games like, you know, the Prince of Persia, Sands of Time trilogy.
Yeah.
Now we get Assassin's Creed after Assassin's Creed after Assassin's Creed.
They got to milk
and
that.
And they promised that it wouldn't be annual anymore for a while. Unless they're not counting this new India one, because they had planned on releasing it last year and it just didn't happen.
Yeah. Well,
I'll never get a sequel to my favorite Prince of Persia game.
Yeah. Well, Unity's ending, you know, pissed me off so much that I'm like, fuck this series.
Just wait until they make Assassin's Creed Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
It was originally going to be a Prince of Persia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dungeon Buster says, Odin's Fear, the Truflesir. Yeah, there you go.
What?
The Truflesir. Because it was, you know, but anyways.
Truflesir.
Yeah, I'm so over the Assassin's Creed games.
I love the lore behind it. The idea, I think, is really cool. I mean, it's completely fanciful. You know, it's sci-fi magic, kind of in the same sense. It's like a more grounded version of Star Wars in the sense that, you know, it's magic, you know. It's magic with a technological, you know, coat of paint on it. But it's fun, you know. Like I got the that big dictionary, like, you know, series Bible thing that they put out when they put out AC3, mm-hmm. and then AC3 happened to be where the series started to lose me.
Yeah. All right, let's move on, guys. Yeah. From Odinsphere.
Yeah, I know we're getting into.
Let's go on to a story from Destructoid. Starman.net. Organizing one final push for Mother 3 localization. Yeah. Ultra-dedicated fans at Starman.net never seem to give up. They've been campaigning for an official Western release of Mother 3 for what seems like a lifetime. According to the fan size, now is the ripest it will ever be, with Lucas joining Super Smash Bros. For 3DS and Wii U, along with the Japanese Virtual Console release. So the message is...
probably never like 10 years old or 11 years old.
Yeah.
And I hope they're successful, but I don't think they will be.
I don't think they will be either, man.
Yeah. I really,
you're breaking up, buddy. You're breaking up.
Nintendo rarely listens to fan petitions, but at the very least, it might rattle their cages enough, and then they might eventually do it later on.
Yeah.
Hey, Mud, when you have offering to like, please take our existing translation and use it for free, and
take Mado's translation. Pay Mado.
How do you say circular file in Japanese?
Because that's
where they're going to toss it.
Yeah. Circular file.
I know the word that you actually know the word you're looking for, and it's like it's gomi something, but I can't remember the rest of it.
All right, Eric. Next story, please.
Next story is from Destructoid, and it's basically the 2016 Pokemon distribution event schedule. I had to actually fix the link because it got moved somewhere.
Okay, so
to the circular file where it belongs.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, it's Pokemon's 20th anniversary this year. Now I feel old.
As part
of the celebration, you can expect a whole lot of distribution events for X and Y and Omega, Ruby, Alpha, Sapphire. Here's when and where you'll be able to get some rare pocket monsters. Starting on February 1st to the 24th, and that's how it pretty much works every month up until December. You'll get Mew, and then next month will be Celebi and Jirachi and Darkrai. Oh yeah, Mew's at GameStop, and the other two are at Nintendo Network, and Darkrai's at GameStop again.
You know, I think I've come to the conclusion, unless it's Dragon Quest game, I will never step into another GameStop.
And there's Manaphy after that, Nintendo Network. Shaymin, also Nintendo Network. And then we go back to GameStop for Arceus in August.
Yeah.
And then Victini in September with Nintendo Network, and Keldeo with Nintendo Network, and Gensect at GameStop, and Meloetta at Nintendo Network. No McDonald's ones.
Is it just me, or is Nintendo kind of cozying up to GameStop lately?
They are. They have been for a long time.
At least most of these distributions are Nintendo Network.
Yeah. But it's like with the what are they called? Amiibos. Like that, and their Pokemon downloads and stuff like that.
Exclusive Amiibos.
Yeah,
it makes sense with it. As bad as the Wii U started out, like it really makes sense to partner with the biggest game distributor.
But why don't they partner with like Toys R Us or Best Buy?
Honestly, probably Walmart sells more video games than GameStop does.
There's no probably there. You're talking about, Walmart is the largest retailer.
Yeah,
in the world.
That's
a good point. Even though they're closing a bunch of South American stores, but yeah, it's a good point.
All right, let's move on to the next story, guys. I'll go ahead and read this one from Gamatsu. Actually, I'll read the next couple of stories because they're both Dragon Quest related, and I love Dragon Quest.
I should read those.
You should shut your mouth.
Totally read all Dragon Quest related.
No, you should not.
Just to annoy Frank.
For an impartial and unbiased.
Get out of here. This comes to us from Gamatsu.
Lies, I tell you.
Dragon Quest Heroes 2 launches May 27th in Japan. So there you go. May 27th in Japan. May 27th is also the 30th anniversary of the Dragon Quest series. So that's awesome. So there's that story. Next story also from Gamatsu. Dragon Quest XI. This is a huge story, guys. Dragon Quest XI aiming for release before May 27th, 2017 in Japan. Story's nearly done, series creator says. They shared a little bit, Squeenix shared a little information about Dragon Quest XI during its Dragon Quest 30th anniversary project presentation today. Yuji Horii said the story is nearly finished and the beginning part of the game is playable, but because of the game's volume, it will take some time. He's hoping to release it in the 30th anniversary year, which series unification producer Ryutaro Ichimura defined as between May 27th of this year and May 27th of next year. So it's in development for the PS4 and the 3DS. So that's awesome. That's good.
I think it's weird that they want to launch Heroes 2 the same day that this might come out.
Yeah.
It does seem a little puzzling.
Play Pro Field, so trying to go do you want the action RPGs? Go with Heroes.
Yeah, but I think Konami made a similar mistake when they did the month of Silent Hill. They released three Silent Hill games in 1 month, and people were just like, I have no idea.
So that was like Silent Hill HD Collection, and then that was
Silent
Book
Hill
of Memories, and then Downpour. Whatever the other one was.
Downpour.
down for.
Yeah, I just want to mention that Nobu Uematsu's in chat, so we got a celebrity in chat. Not only did we have a celebrity on the line earlier,
he's being a jingoistic asshole.
Yeah.
Japan and a little bit racist. Japan number one, American number zero. Hey, wait a minute.
Hey, number two. Welcome.
Hey, I don't think he's really Uematsu.
Welcome to chat, MX. I mean, Uematsu.
Welcome to chat, racist. Uematsu.
Welcome to racist. Welcome to racist. Anime.
Right.
RPG talk with.
All right, break.
Breakman's become MXT. Are you sure? Aren't you being infected by his virus?
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, what? How did I get looped into that one?
It spreads like I think it was the blood transfusion that you got from him.
All right, break. We
talked that blood transfusion. God damn it!
Should have become a Jehovah's
Witness. Hold on. Hey, break. We talked to Vic Ireland about limited editions, so it's appropriate that you read this next story.
Coming to us live from Gematsu, you really had to get a segue in,
didn't
you?
Didn't I?
Knights of Azure, limited edition announced.
Azure.
I call it Azure.
Azure. What?
Azure Dreams.
Azure Dreams.
Azure Dreams. There is ass in my dreams. The 1999 limited edition includes a copy of Knights Azure for PS4, full color 40-page hardcover art book, 36-track original soundtrack with jewel case. I like that. Cloth poster. 5 mini art prints. Collector's box includes all of the above. Fuck that. That is not worth it.
You cut $20 out of that immediately by taking the art prints and the cloth poster out.
North America, March 29th, April 1st for Europe.
I do have to wonder when I see that. That's like, oh, Adam, with a CD jewel case that you'll open once, copy the thing to disc, and never look at again.
Yeah.
Put it to iTunes.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, Mug, next story, please.
All right, coming to us live from Destructoid, it's Bravely Second, and Lair.
Wait, no, dude, it's 2016. We can move on from
that. Wait, the last one's coming out April 1st. I hope it's not an elaborate April Fool's joke.
We can go with all new jokes now.
This one will all fine.
New jokes on this.
If you want to, I mean, go ahead. But I'm just saying you don't have to.
You know what? I say we
hang on. Hang on. I got it. Bravely Second. And Lair.
You coughed up a lung there.
Okay.
Did you survive talking?
I am reading. I am reading the story now. Thank you.
Sorry.
European Bravely Second and Lair Collector's Edition confirmed. It's contagious. Bravely Second. Anyway, Lair will be coming to Nintendo 3DS across Europe on February 26th, along with a Collector's Edition and a playable prude adventure.
Oh man, it's like they're all wearing like clothes down to their ankles
They're all dressed like nuns, like in the photo here. That's awesome.
Anyway, the quote, I like that this is in scare quotes, the epic role-playing adventure is a sequel to the acclaimed Bravely Default.
Yeah.
The story begins with the evil Kaiser Oblivion. Holy crap, that's the most evil name ever.
It's like Kaiser Sosei and Oblivion mixed together.
Abducts Agnes Oblige, I guess, Oblige. Mary J. Blige.
Mary J. Blige.
Bravely Default.
That's awesome.
And her bodyguard, you Ginyolja.
I'm just waiting for Nicki Minaj to show up.
Story. Ginyolja. Okay, hang on. Let me get through this. I will.
Except they're all puns.
I will get through this. Pledging to rescue her from the Kaiser's Skyhold, an impregnable fortress floating high over Eternia. Hey, not Arcadia, damn. Along the way, you, not you as in you, the second person, Y-E-W as in the tree, will need to meet up with, will team up with Magnolia Arch. What's with all the tree puns? And other new faces, plus returning heroes like Idea Lee and Tiz Ariola. Okay. To survive foreboding dungeons and conquer fearsome energies.
Energies.
No,
I'm not letting you pass up
fearsome energies.
I'm sure there are some enemies that are energy.
I want to know more about the Ariolas.
Yeah, that's the name of this episode. Fearsome energy, guys. That's awesome. Hey, I was just wondering when Nicki Minaj is going to show up in this story, man. We had Mary J. Blige. Why not Nicki Minaj, you know? Anyways. All right, let's move on, guys.
But no word on a U.S. CE, and there's still no release date for the U.S.
Of course not. All right, we got a couple more stories.
I don't think I'm going to be able to stick with that joke because my head hurts now.
No, you could do. You know what the semicolon should be is like. It should be like instead of a cough, like a sneeze. Hachoo! That'd be awesome, man.
Maybe right. I'll if I see another colon, I'll try a different one. I have some ideas.
All right, man, that's awesome. Conquer those energies, Dungeon Buster says. All right, next story comes to us from our favorite, Silicon Era. To the Moon sequel announced as Finding Paradise. Ken Gao of Freebird Games has announced the sequel to his 2011 emotional adventure game, To the Moon. It's called Finding Paradise. You can watch the music and screenshots teaser in the video above.
Team Niall!
Yep, the plan is to get Finding Paradise out for PC by the end of 2016. However, Gao notes that it's probably more likely to end up coming out in early 2017. So there you go. Yes. Not till 2017. So this is not a story.
Any guys, if you haven't played To the Moon, it's awesome. It'll take you probably about 5 hours to complete, and you will never forget it.
What about a bird story?
It's okay.
Yeah,
I got it's the impression I've gotten is that it's a bird story will be more significant once you play Finding Paradise because they all kind of they take place in the same universe.
Mm-hmm.
And the Finding Paradise is meant to be a prequel to the Moon.
Yeah.
And a bird story is kind of a bridging story between the two of them.
Yeah.
So they're basically telling a trilogy in reverse order.
Yeah. Mm.
I'm gonna have to play those games. I've heard a lot about them.
You really should.
This next game, I'll read this story too, also from Gamatsu. Dark Cloud 2, I played, and I think it's awesome. For the PS4, launches January 19th. Dark Cloud 2 will launch for PlayStation 4 via PS2 emulation on January 19th. So there you go. That's the story. So what do you think of that? Dark Cloud 2 coming.
Here's a little factoid. Dark Cloud 2 is called Dark Chronicle in Japan and Europe.
Was it called?
Dark Chronicle.
Ah, oh, Dark Chronicle. I like that name a little bit better. I wonder why they changed it. Whatever. All right, guys. That's the news today.
Just brand recognition trumps, I guess.
Yeah. Any Twitter questions? We're going to skip over homie discounts because there's none.
Well, I should say that that massive sale is still going on the PSN. Their PlayStation Essentials stuff, and you can get some pretty impressive deals. Like you can get the Mass Effect trilogy on PS3 for $12.
I've got a homie discount too. You can get a $40 PlayStation Plus card on, or maybe it's a digital code for. So that's a year's worth of PlayStation Plus on Newegg.
What you can get a full year for $40.
Yeah,
that's not bad.
I'm not sure if it requires a coupon code or not, but. You'd have to check Twitter for that. Mm. I think Good Game Deals or Cheap Ass Gamer has something on it.
Yeah, just search out for it, guys, for those discounts. All right, break. Any Twitter
questions? There is some Star Wars talk on Twitter. I don't think we need any spoilers for this one because it's not specific to the new one. From 35 Chaos, we talked about some of his Twitter questions last week, and these are kind of a continuation. He said he could be wrong about the X-Wings. He's using his memory from books he read 10-plus years ago.
Yeah, we all know how vivid a memory Freak 5 has. So.
Yeah. Well, I went and looked it up before that show with some of his questions. Like this, because I was kind of curious, because when Disney bought it from George Lucas, they changed a lot of history. Mm-hmm. So he might be thinking of the way it was, and I read it to him the way like they changed it. At least I think I read that. You know, maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Me wrong? What a shock. Anyways, he says, also, I thought the creator was a TIE pilot who used problems he knew. The TIE had to design the X-Wing after he defected. I think the way I read it was he did it kind of before he defected, and he took the only design with him when he defected.
Hmm.
But, right. You know, I just
What's this about now?
No, the X-Wing. The designer of the X-Wing originally was designing it for the Empire.
Well, it was a modification of the, you know, basically the little six wing fighters that they had in the
What were those called? I forget.
I can't remember. I've actually got a Lego set of one of them, but I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah. So anyway, and he defected. So obviously, an Empire didn't get that technology. Next wing, blah blah blah. Everybody knows history at that point. Mm-hmm. But I was I went to look and investigate because when Disney bought it, they obviously erased a lot of what a lot of us people knew as history. And what we thought we knew no longer exists.
Everything you know is wrong.
Pretty much. So anyway, moving on. He says, "What I wonder about the Sarlacc is who studied it for 1,000 years to learn that it was how long it took to that was how long it took to digest."
I can maybe explain that. Like, it's sort of like a carbon dating thing. Like, maybe they had a method to figure out how long it takes, you know, like carbon dating isn't an exact science or anything, like, you know, but you can get a good idea of what period. So maybe that's what they did, some type of weird, you know, throw in, you know,
and
like a
sensor. And one last Star Wars thing. He says, you forgot the third black person in Star Wars, the greatest hero of the rebellion, Wilro Hood. He is Finn's father.
Wilro Hood. Yes. Oh, and I thought of something. In the original trilogy, there are two stormtroopers who actually hit one of the protagonists. Both of them, both times, it's Princess Leia who's hit. In the very beginning, remember, there's one set for stun. She gets zapped, and then in the fight on Endor, she gets shot like in the shoulder or something.
Yep. It's true. Like,
so two times you actually see the stormtroopers hit one of the protagonists. They're not completely useless.
What Mug is saying that in the Star Wars universe, women suck at combat. That's what he's saying.
No, I think it's just that Star Wars laser blasts they're slightly homing towards estrogen.
Yeah, like the lasers the blasters themselves are sexist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, all right, all guns are phallic, you know.
All right, all guns are sexist.
Swords are phallic, too.
I said all guns are phallic, not sexist. Swords.
No, I said they're sexist. Yeah. I called them out.
All right, let's move on, guys. We can
lightsaber.
Talk
no, we're not done. Uh-huh. Freak 5 Chaos is an asshole.
We knew that.
He says, if you wake up as a woman and have to choose one, which of your RP Grinders co-host would you have sex with?
Oh my God!
I'm totally gonna go with Brig.
Thank you. Well, I'm going Moria then. Thank you.
Love.
Well, I'm going with Moria because I know he's into that.
Oh, I love it! I'm gonna go ahead.
I think Frank hates it, so I won't.
That's a good point. Moria has experience in this realm. Right.
I think we're working towards organizing a
no poons for Frank.
I think I'm just gonna take an El Paso on this question here.
Come on, man. Pass the old El Paso. Taste the old.
Come
Southside.
On, you know you want to say Moria. Come on, say.
No, look, I would fuck my.
You I don't want to admit it.
I would fuck myself. How about
dude.
That?
There we go. All right, Frank totally wants to drink from this mug. Let's
get
face
out
it.
Of here. Fuck that, man. Anyways,
there's your title, motherfucker.
Oh my God, man. All right, what?
I responded with something pretty nasty to him, and he said, "You know, you love my random questions, that bastard." And I want to thank Dungeon Buster for pimping us about the working designs and Victor Island interview.
Oh, I appreciate
that's
that,
all.
Dungeon Buster. Yeah.
Thank you,
for
DB.
Us, man. Yeah. Any pub we can get, that'd be awesome. Yeah, because, you know, two listeners. I mean, we need to get at least one more out of this, you know. All right. Quickly, very quickly, what have you been playing? I've been playing Marvel Puzzle Quest and Sting Star. Eric, what have you been playing?
All I pretty much played was just a little bit more of Code Realize.
All right. Cool. Break, you.
Oh, wait. I did finish Undertale. That's right.
Mm. Okay. Break?
Hold on.
You're waiting for it? For it? Okay, Break. Come on.
All right. I didn't play anything new. Halo and Record Keeper and... play a bit more Killer Instinct. Just getting ready for Wayland's severe beating of my ass.
Yeah, I can't wait
to
hear
Shadow Jago?
No,
I'm
for
running out. Time's running out.
$10 for one character.
They may never be available again.
They I don't know, that's always said, and then at some point, like, hey, look, this character is now $5.
Or either that, or they come out with, like, a special edition where you can get all the characters for, like, $5 more or something.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. They always say that. If you're just patient, like, yeah, there's no reason for me personally to rush out and get anything.
Yeah, same
for
here.
The most part.
Especially AAA titles, man. You might want to pick up that Summon Night 5, though.
Right, right. And to support somebody who supported our show, absolutely.
Although, if you're getting a digitally break, you might have difficulty because I think there's no way to transfer your game from the PS Store because the store on the PSP is dead.
I'll see if one of my GameStops has a copy of it.
You can't probably find it physically.
Yeah, I was going to say you're probably going to have to order a copy.
You can't find it physically because I'm not sure if they're taking orders anymore, and you can only get through Gaijin Works because they didn't go through online retailers. I think maybe Amazon, but Amazon would probably be the one place.
Amazon,
you can check.
Yeah.
But if failing that, you could always just borrow someone's PS3 and download it to there, and then transfer it to your PSP.
Yeah. All right, anything else, Break?
And I've been playing a lot of Star Wars Battlefront.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious what DLC they have coming because they, you know, everything.
I know that there's like a Battle of Jakku DLC thing, a map or whatever they've got going on there, but that's the only, literally the only gaming thing, like video gaming thing that's had anything to do with the new movie. Oh, wait, there's a Star Wars pinball table.
All right. That map's pretty fun. It's basically you're playing on Jakku during the battle that you see the remnants of in Episode 7.
That's good.
It's a fun map, but it's not that much different from any of the other maps. I mean,
that seems to kind of be the common complaint about the game. There's just not. It's kind of shallow.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering about the DLC. Is there going to be more DLC? Because, I mean, there's season passes and stuff. They definitely want you to spend more money on this game. I've been playing a lot of the space fights. Or, well, I shouldn't say the space fights. They're actually in – they're on the planets. But the TIE fighters versus X-Wings and such. I have a lot of fun with it, but yeah, it's kind of shallow. Like, is there going to be more? Maybe are they going to add space battles? Maybe something different, like maybe fighting trench in the trench or something like that, or fighting walkers. Like, it's a lot of fun, but it's shallow. Yeah, I think shallow is a great example. Yeah. Great definition.
All right. What about you, Mug? What are you playing?
The only thing I've really been playing lately is I played a little bit of Just Cause 3 here and there. I've mostly been watching movies and stuff.
Yeah, all right. All right, let's get to our Stinkos, guys. Eric, you have a Stinko this week?
Stinkos, no, I don't have any.
All right, Breakman.
Oh, that's easy.
Oh, wait, I did. That's right. I talked about it with you earlier, but I heard someone I know on Twitter has cancer.
Yeah, Final Maxstrom. Has cancer. That really sucks.
Final Max Storm, not Max Maxstrom.
I always say Maxstrom.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Ah, shit. That sucks. That
really sucks.
That does suck.
Hopefully it's one of the types that...
Yeah.
Hopefully he caught it early and he can take care of it.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. I like him.
All right, Breaks, man.
And mine's more petty, because mine goes to the... mine goes to sports, and I know Frank understands, because he watched the game, too, and... that playoff game versus Steelers, yeah, exactly. Everybody I saw pretty much on camera came off bad in that game. Both teams, fans, there were people throwing shit on the field. Like, what? Like, grow up.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad example. But you know what, Breakman? This week, I think.
Well, wait, but before you say that, like. Of all the people that looked bad on, as far as what was going on, like there were bad, dirty plays from both teams.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite team, the Bengals, there were dirty hits, and same with the Steelers. Which today there were fines going out for it, and I think those were unfair. And there are bad calls by the refs, and like I said, the fans throwing shit on the field, and coaches on both teams. But you know who looked the worst to me? Marvin Lewis.
Yeah,
his coach.
They got.
You know why? Because he lost complete control of his team.
No.
As a coach, I think that should be getting should be something to get you fired. Obviously, it's not because Marvin Lewis or not Marvin Lewis, Mike Brown doesn't like to fire people for some reason. I guess I don't know.
I don't know, man. But it was a terrible, terrible loss for the Bengals.
I'm trying to get mediocre Marvin the trend because after 13 years as the head coach, the second longest coach in the NFL, when other coaches who have accomplished more have lost their jobs at this point.
You know what would be interesting is if they fired Marvin Lewis and hired Josh McDaniels. Like he kind of sucked towards the end of the time here in Denver, but I think it would be a good fit there with Andy Dalton, man.
The most interesting thing they could possibly do.
Oh, shut up, Mug.
No, hang on. Hear me out here.
Yeah.
You know, swap players from other sports. You know, this particular basketball team is now playing football. These football players are now playing hockey.
Oh, so ridiculous, dude!
I think it would be hilarious.
I'm reading comments in chat, and
didn't they do that in basketball?
Power Ranger guy.
What?
I'm reading things in the chat, and the thing about the Power Ranger guy, it's like being a Power Ranger just makes you a criminal.
Oh, damn.
There have been a bunch of
apparently being Winona Ryder also makes you a criminal.
Oh, and real quickly, break, man, on that loss, that they should have never have lost that game. They should have won that game. But I'm glad they did because now we get to kick the
Steelers' ass. I really want you guys to kick the Steelers' asses. They don't deserve to be there.
You guys, as if Frank is actually going to be playing the game.
Just stop it, Mug. That's how sports people talk, man. Team, you know, like we own the team. Get out of here. You're dumb.
You're taking credit for something you had literally no part in.
Your face is dumb, man. Anyways, let's see. Mug, your stinko. Your stinko, man.
My stinko. Well, I got LASIK back in 2002? Yeah, 2002.
My brother got LASIK surgery, too.
Yeah, and I loved it. It, you know, it was pretty damn awesome. The only bad part was the recovery. But sadly, it does not prevent your eyes from continuing to degenerate naturally with age. And so this week I had to go and get an eye exam and get glasses.
Ooh. Oh, that sucks.
I'm not happy about that.
So what's the point of LASIK?
See, you're no longer fuckable, Mug. So.
I'm telling you, you still want to drink out of this mug?
Real quickly, break, man. Burfict did not deserve the fate that he got. I watched that hit over and over, and yes, it was a vicious hit, but he leaned in with his shoulder.
The Steeler that hit our running back knocked him out.
Dude, that center.
He was unconscious for like 10 seconds.
How do you not get penalized for
knocking someone unconscious?
Well, look.
Mama said.
Look, the center.
That's the joke. Oh my God.
The center for Pittsburgh, Breakman, he's got something coming to him because he knocked one of our players, one of our captains out when we played them, and I guarantee they got something for him next game. So.
This is a dirty team, and like I said before, as far as perfect, I think he is kind of dirty. But for the Bengals, like that this is the first time we've had like a kind of a dirty player. The Steelers always have dirty players.
Yeah, they're thought of as like this righteous franchise, and they're dirty motherfuckers. But all right,
Broncos kick their ass, please.
Yeah, there you go.
Peyton Manning dance on their bloody corpse.
Oh, it's gonna happen, dude. It's a certainty. All right.
And I mean that figuratively because I don't want, like, when I say corpse, I don't want people to think I want anybody to get injured because that's stupid.
All righty. Real quickly, my wife was real sick. I barely made the interview today. She has, I think it's a kidney stone, man. I think that's what we narrowed it down to.
That is painful.
Yeah, she's in a lot of pain, man. Like, my stinko goes to the fucking hospitals, and ER wait times. Like, there's no point in emergency rooms. I've come to that conclusion. Unless you're bleeding, don't go to an emergency room because you're just going to wait for hours on end.
The only way to get in quick into emergency room is coming in on the ambulance.
Come in on
actually, you know, when they ask you what the problem is, tell them tell them the problem's in your chest.
Yep, chest pain. That's the only way you're going to get seen.
Yep,
that only is way. Or like what Breakman said, we actually contemplated calling the ambulance from the hospital so they could take her into a room. Like that's fucking fucked up it was.
Yeah, that's a sad commentary on the state of the American healthcare.
Yeah, it is, man. We waited 1 hour at one, and she was in so much pain. Then I'm like, fuck this. So I took her to a different emergency room. We waited 3 hours at that one, and I'm like, fuck this. And we went to a third one and finally got in, but it took another 3.5 hours to, you know, come to some sort of, I guess, conclusion, which there was no conclusion.
It's awful that it should be like that. But, yeah, I mean, you should have said, I have pains in my chest. They'll rush your ass in.
I thought you said you were in here for a knee injury.
Yeah.
Well, no, I said
chest. It's thrown a clot and it's gotten to my heart. Get me in there.
Yes, exactly. Now.
All right. And then we had I hate this thing where people think things happen in threes. It's just the way that people's minds work.
But and the power and you really do have a real chance of winning the Powerball. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you have a real good chance of throwing your money away.
Yeah.
And I need to learn how to play the Powerball. So someone asked me this, someone posted this on my Facebook timeline. And I said, I need to learn how to play the Powerball. It's very simple. You take your money, place it carefully in the toilet, and flush. Voila!
No. You know what's funny?
I said take your hard-earned money and place it carefully.
I've actually won money from Powerball before.
I've won money from Powerball. But the thing is, you know, the odds of you
actually getting
the jackpot.
It's astronomical. I think it's like 1 in 252
292 million in change.
Yeah, it's pretty
huge. And that's almost the population.
There are bigger odds going to a local casino in Vegas and getting money there.
But the thing is, those odds, you have better odds of getting struck by lightning 4 times in the same day.
Yeah.
I was going to say, getting struck by lightning, kind of shaking it off, and, you know, walk to your car, get struck by lightning again.
Yeah.
Shaking that off.
There's a video of a guy there's a video of a guy who got struck by lightning twice in the span of about 30 seconds.
Oh yeah, it's happened for
sick.
Sure.
That is
it never strikes twice in the same spot. It's like, no, it'll do it again.
Yeah, for sure it will. All right, guys.
Oh, you know what? I do have an impromptu stinko.
Go ahead, man.
Having to review Paper Mario and Luigi, or Mario and Luigi Paper Jam, but it not being here and being in a paper jam.
All right.
He wants me to review it within a day because that's probably when it's going to get here. But yeah, no. The review's going to have to come later. That's
all. Of course. If you don't have the fucking game, what are you supposed to say? I don't have the fucking game. There you go.
Yeah, I'm blaming USPS for being slow.
Yeah. All right, so I mentioned things happened in threes, supposedly, but we all know about David Bowie's passing. I played some music at the beginning.
Alan Rickman.
Hold on, dude. Will you just
Jesus Christ.
God damn it.
Just like the man himself. He just his death just upstaged David Bowie's.
Of course.
And now Eric has just reprised the entire thing.
Oh, my God. Okay, so the first person – or the second person I'm going to mention here – is this guy.
Boy!
You think that when you die, you go to heaven. You come to us.
That, of course, is Angus Grimm, best known for his role in Phantasm, Phantasm 2, Phantasm 3, etc., etc.
Phantasm 4, Abel Forion.
Yeah.
that was the actual name of the movie.
Yeah, it was Oblivion with the IV as 4, why is it Abel Forion? Yeah. He was the tall man in the Phantasm series.
Man, yes.
That is
93 or 90 when he was almost 90. He was like a couple months shy of 90. And what got me when I saw that, you know, the Phantasm 2 and Phantasm 3, that was like, as it ended, like they were in the end of the second one, like they were in the back of the hearse and it was like, it's all over. And he suddenly appears and he goes, no, it's not.
Yeah.
And then the third one, it's like, you know, it's finally over. And then he shows up and he goes, it's never over.
Yeah.
I'm like, and I thought, now it's over. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I made myself sad.
Well, I mean,
the one that always got me with him was that when that guy is like having sex with that woman, and all of a sudden she changes into him.
Oh yeah, she had the balls, she had the gold balls as tits or silver balls, whatever that.
I guess we can all say right now that it is finally over. You know, I mean
that really sucks.
But those were great movies, great like you know stupid scary movies,
over the top cheesy. Yeah. Scary horror movies. Yes.
And what's funny is that you know, if they were to redo those now, it's like he'd probably do some pretty interesting stuff just because he did a lot with the very limited technology at his disposal. You know,
that's a good point. The floating ball looked really good for back in the day.
Oh yeah.
They found some pretty interesting ways, and then Phantasm 3 was when they finally got a hold of some CG and were able to do some crazy shit with it.
Yeah. But it's a pretty sad day indeed. Also, this guy passed away.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
That's not a lot of, but Alan Rickman passed away. He was obviously in Die Hard. He actually had a yippee-ki-yay moment in that movie as well, which was awesome.
What was it you said to me? Yippee-ki-yay?
Yeah.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. It was great, man.
No, yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah, yippee-ki-yay.
No, hang on. Motherfucker.
Motherfucker. Right. Yeah. But yes, also, wasn't he Professor Snape's in...
He was
Snape. Also was in Galaxy Quest.
You know what my favorite role
by
is?
By Grobthar's Hammer, you will be.
By Grobthar's Hammer, yeah.
He was also Marvin the Paranoid Android in the Hitchhiker's Guide movie, although he was not nearly as good as the original voice actor, or actually as Douglas Adams was in the audiobook.
You also did Malachi from Dogma.
Christ.
What was that?
You're Frank? Slamming him on the way to the grave. Jesus Christ, man.
I'm not slamming him on the way to the grave. I never – I always thought it's like, okay, he sounds like he's trying to be
– Marvin the Martian?
He sounds like he's trying to channel Stephen Moore, who was the original voice of Marvin in the old radio plays. Yeah. I'm like, that's fine and good, but Stephen Moore's still alive. He could have done it.
Yeah. Dungeon Bus says, by Grabthar's Hammer. He will be missed for sure, man. He was a great actor, just a really good.
Yes.
Like before English actors were English actors, Alan Rickman was the English actor. You know, him and
he was an English actor's English actor.
Yeah. For sure.
Also, I didn't know this at the time when I first saw the movie, but he was Sheriff Nottingham in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Oh yeah. Carve him in twain with a spoon.
Yeah.
A spoon. Dungeon
Bus says, interesting fact, when McClane took off the watch at the end, Rickman's face was his real shock at being dropped because the director wanted to do it without telling him.
Oh, that sucks. What a dick move.
Yeah. That's kind of what Ridley Scott did in Alien.
Yeah.
He's like, something's going to happen. I won't tell you when, and I won't tell you what.
Except for
John Hurt and Ridley Scott, and I think maybe one or two other people.
Well,
like,
yeah,
why do all the cameras have plastic sheeting all over them? Wasn't basically what they were.
John Hurt would have left that fucking set in a minute if he didn't know what the fuck was going on. You know,
he had to sit in makeup. You know, and that's 10 hours.
Yeah. I just heard John Hurt's a real son of a bitch to work with too, man. Like,
I don't know. He's a great actor.
Yeah. But anyways, let's move on to our sweetos. Moria, I don't think you have anything. Break, do you have something?
For Christmas, I bought Mrs. Breakman Netflix.
Yay! Right on, man.
She wants to see Fuller House. I'm not sure when that's released.
Oh, my God.
Released.
Boo.
She should watch House of Cards.
I just finished watching the first season of Daredevil, and it may be the best superhero series I've seen.
Oh, God, it's so good, isn't it?
Daredevil is fucking amazing. It has one – and, like, I think the third episode or something, It has one of the best television fight scenes I've ever seen.
Oh, it's awesome. That show is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, I keep hearing great things about Jessica Jones. I haven't seen that yet.
That'll be the next thing I watch. But Daredevil was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And dude, if you haven't seen House of Cards yet, watch it. It's amazing.
I got to watch that. It's on my queue.
I'll get around to it. Yeah, Netflix is pretty fucking sweet.
Netflix is now basically
We've been watching marathons of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, too.
Oh, dude, if you like comedy, you got to watch this show called Comedy Bang Bang or With Bob and David. Oh, God, those shows are so fucking funny. If you like sketch comedy, you would love those shows, man. They're awesome. But, yeah, that's awesome, right?
So Always Sunny and Daredevil. Yeah. So all Netflix, right. Thumbs up.
Awesome. Eric, anything? I don't see anything there, man.
No, any sweetos.
Yeah. Mine is just that the Broncos are going to kick some ass this weekend.
God, I hope so.
It's going to happen for sure. All right. Mug, we're not going to do a free-for-all, so Mug, do you have any reviews?
I had something. Well, I thought you would appreciate this. And I do have kind of – and I'll just mention, I have kind of a sweeto. I finally, after having this thing for a few years now, I have a 3D TV.
Oh, and I love 3D.
I have.
They still make those?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Like I said, I got it a few years ago. but I have something like maybe 15 3D Blu-rays. Mm-hmm. I have a whole bunch of Blu-ray movies, but only about 15 or so that I actually have, 3D.
Right.
And so I'd watch them and here and there, and I was like, and I hadn't watched any of them in a long time. So this, for whatever reason, I could just never get the 3D to look right.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure if it was like a setting or it's just I can't get my eyes to focus right or whatever. And apparently, it was just my eyes. Mm-hmm. And the trick to this was smoking. Like I had to relax in just the right way. But I wanted to share something with you that I discovered. I don't know if you're particularly fond of just kind of like overwhelming your senses, Frank. When you're chilling,
mm-hmm.
But have you ever seen that thing where you look on, it's mostly on like bigger movies where it'll have, when you select your audio, it'll have that descriptive video service.
Yeah.
And if you're not familiar with that, it's basically like the movie plays like it normally would, but there's another voice that pops in, kind of like a narrator, that describes the on-screen action.
Yes.
So that a blind person can watch it, or quote unquote, watch it and enjoy it, and still understand what's going on.
Yeah,
I was like, that's really cool. But watch that in 3D while also having an iPod playing some random music.
Which movie?
And I've done it with several of them now. The first one I did it with was Terminator Genesis,
mm-hmm.
and that was like, ah. Like, I can't think straight. I'm like, there's just too much going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I discovered, like, wow, you know what? I really enjoy this. I need to get more 3D movies. It's like I watched, like, all Avengers and, both of the Avengers movies. And I watched John Carter. And, hell, I even watched the last two Final Destination movies. And
you know what's a really good 3D movie to watch is Ant-Man. It's a great 3D
movie. Oh, yeah, I can see that. But I'll tell you what I found out was a really bad 3D movie to watch. And this is a movie I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
It's Tron Legacy.
Oh, really?
I imagine it would be.
I've personally always found Tron to be overrated.
I loved the original. It's like, and when I watched Tron Legacy, I was like, it's okay. But then it's like I went back and I rewatched it. And apparently, when I'm relaxing, shall we say,
mm-hmm.
I'm partaking of some adult refreshments. but I found that I get this really bizarre, like, just hyper focus on details, and I'll notice stuff that I normally just kind of like, whatever, just kind of let it gloss by. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't Terminator Genesis, wasn't the first one I watched. The first one I watched was Resident Evil Retribution. Resident Evil Retribution. But I hate that.
Okay.
I hate
why?
That. I have, because I own it, and I own it because I own all the other ones.
Oh. Wait, what, which movie did you say?
Resident Evil Retribution, the most recent one. Now, and apparently while I was, I got into this thing where I would open up a notepad on my computer and just start typing out my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, and I found that I would analyze movies to death. Mm. I was just finding out, just destroying movies in the process of doing this. Like I essentially like live tweeted Resident Evil Retribution, or like a viewing of Resident Evil Retribution to myself. And I went back and looked at it, I'm like, wow, I was I already knew the movie was bad. I didn't like it. Yeah. Because I mean, I enjoy the movie, like the Resident Evil films, because kind of they're goofy, they're dumb, they're kind of fun.
I really liked the first Resident Evil. It had that one cool scene where the lasers like cut everybody into little pieces.
Yeah,
and you saw like the liquid like dripping out.
Yeah, I mean, I like the first one, and I actually really like the third one. It's weird, but I like it. But
I don't know if I saw the third one.
But when I went back and I watched Tron Legacy, I'm like, this movie's fucking terrible. So I was looking at it, I was like, okay, nothing in that movie. It's like other than the CG itself, the entire movie looks incredibly cheap. It's like, instead of having this filming technique that they, and they, it's like, okay, we're going to dress everyone in black and put LED strips on their clothing. that's exactly what they did. That's exactly how they did it. I'm like, oh. I mean, really, the only parts of that movie that are worth watching are the
chase scenes, obviously.
Well, no, not the chase scene. The light cycle fight is cool, and the disc battle is cool.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is just like, you know, none of this makes sense. I was like, okay, you have Flynn has been trapped in this digital world for however long. It's like, okay, I don't have any problem with that, because he was trapped in it before, and he's just been trapped in there for a lot longer. You know, that's fine. Well, and Danny, I was like, okay, mysteriously, for some reason, he's aged like an extra 20 years. You know, he's been gone for like 10 years. He looks like he's, you know, in his late 60s or whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
that has to do with Jeff.
He's been getting drunk on the Tron alcohol or whatever they drink.
The Tron alcohol, yes.
It piles you faster. That's what happens.
It's Digihol. but no, it's like okay. And then she, so this character, the Olivia Wilde's character, Cora or whatever her name, she gets him out of the game grid, and she brings him back to find where Flynn is. It's like, okay, and he has this little retreat. That's all well and good, but they sit down to dinner. Now, there was a scene in the original Tron where, like, oh God, we're weak. You know, I need energy. So they find this little pool of energy. They drink from it, and it gives, you know, restores their health, basically. I was like, okay, within the game digital sort of thing, that makes perfect sense. I mean, like, there's enough suspension of disbelief. But it's like in Tron Legacy, they sit down to dinner. There's a suckling pig on the table.
It's all
where the
digital,
fuck did that come from?
It's just digital, man. You have to.
Okay,
like,
I'm sorry.
Maybe they stole it from Minecraft.
That's just dumb.
I don't think it's dumb.
And not just that. It's I'm watching this. Like nothing in this universe feels like, you know, this is it. You know, it feels like, okay, this could be an analog for like how electronics works. Mm. Like, given the limited understanding of that kind of stuff. Of the original, it's like it made sense, and it made, you know, like the world of Tron as portrayed in the original was very like purpose driven. It's like everything was very regimented, kind of militaristic. It's like, okay, because programs and stuff are made for a specific purpose. They do that specific thing, and nothing in the game world of Tron, or rather in Tron Legacy, nothing in the digital world feels like it. They thought it was Star Wars. It's like, okay, you know, we're on this other planet it's always night, and it's always, you know, Miami in the 80s.
I actually think there was an explanation for that, Mug. Remembering what I can from gathering from the interviews and stuff that I read about it was they did want the scope to be quite a bit bigger than
it's not even that the scope is bigger. It's just that it doesn't feel it feels like it would have been a decent movie if it hadn't been Tron. It's like if we're like, you know, if more say like a more grounded sci-fi movie like John Carter, like where he winds up on an alien world. An alien world just happens to be almost identical to Earth civilization. It's like for some reason everyone goes to a dance clubs at night.
Did you see that movie? Because I've heard it's actually decent.
What, John Carter? Yeah, I own it.
Yeah,
I liked it. Okay. But it's like, you know, he meets that girl from the game grid, and she's walking around with an umbrella. Does it rain in the electronic universe? What does that do? It's like, you know, in a world that's completely created, like that's not just, you know, sprung up, you know, and evolved, you know, but not evolved, but you know what I mean. But like developed out of over billions of years.
It's just, you know, even if you take into account that. The grid evolved. It's just so markedly different from the look and feel of the first movie. It doesn't feel like the same place.
It's not even the look so much that I mind. It's just that the aesthetic of it, like, you know, as far as they're doing like the digital stuff, I'm like, that looks cool. But the look of the outfit.
Not to mention that the movie didn't explain anything.
No. But it's like, okay, you know, you had the character, like the guy who, Zeus, the guy who ran the nightclub. I was like, he was neat. He was entertaining. But why does he exist? What purpose?
There's like
no
world building.
Yeah.
At all.
And like, he's, these people who are, you know, they have this thing about ISOs. These are, you know, basically like independently, you know, they've just sprung up out of nowhere, that, you know, living creatures, living digital creatures that have, that just exist. And we don't know why. It's like, well, that's kind of a neat idea. But then everyone acts like they have free will.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I guess it's almost the same shit could be.
Well, but they're programs, right? They're supposed to have like.
It's like if they're programmed, there should be someone has programmed them, and people don't program. You know, people don't make programs to do nothing. They don't make programs to go to dance clubs.
Exactly. Like, you are like, supposed to be calculating this math. What the fuck are you doing?
Maybe they do in a video. Put that
all down. Stop.
I don't know. Maybe it's a weird commentary for the internet where a bunch of people get online, yell at each other, and do pretty much nothing.
That would have been far more interesting they had users showing up as, like, you know, basically like the digital world is the YouTube comments section. And I wanted to say one other thing. That it's I was thinking about the Star Wars The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. And this, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about it.
Please don't spoil.
But I will say that there's a lot – I don't know if you guys have seen it. You know, it's like there's a lot of bits and pieces where you're like, well, what happened here? Or what happened there? Or how did we reach this point? And, you know, the Star Wars, you know, stuff previously, you know, you always had the expanded universe. And if you were really curious about how this happened or whatever – then you could like kind of dig into the expanded universe. You could, you know, it's like, oh, okay, I'll play the Knights of the Old Republic, and that tells me how this happened or how it started. I mean, it doesn't have a major direct impact on the events of the films, but it's a nice little. It's basically like, you know, it's another way of getting flavor text. You know, if you get my meaning. Mm-hmm. it's, you know, none of it's crucial for you to enjoy and understand the full scope of the film, but it feels like there's a lot of bits and pieces missing from The Force Awakens. And I was wondering, it's like, and in order to get some of that stuff, you know, you have to, you know, read, or you have to buy more stuff to get the full story. And I was wondering if that was intentional. It's kind of like, it feels like it's developed with that that cross media mindset. It's like, if you're looking to get all the relevant details, you know, anything that got in the way of like the pacing of the movie or the whiz bang and all that stuff, you have to look through comics or books or whatever. And it takes for granted that people will get these other things. And it leaves out some significant, if not like immensely crucial details. It's not like Final Fantasy XIII bad, but it's kind of like building a movie like BioWare builds a game, except you have to pay for the codex entries.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and I was wondering,
the fuck off.
And what occurred to me, it was like, was that purely by chance or was it intentional? It's like, if it's like Disney putting pressure on the right, on, you know, whoever's writing, or J.J. Abrams, to produce more product from within the movie. I'm like, holy crap, that's the most cynical thing I think I've ever thought of.
Disney is pretty cynical.
I think you might be right, though.
Yeah. But it's like, and I thought, you know, I enjoyed it, but it felt a little bit off. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not like obviously marketing oriented like the prequels were. The prequels had lots of new designs, which meant lots of new toys and related products for more money. But it has this weird, it almost has this sort of stealthy, net savvy approach to generating more revenue, and it almost feels kind of slimy to me. And it's like, I never minded the traditional merchandising, but I was like, I really hope I'm wrong here. I hope I'm just being like just aggressively cynical.
I like to think most of the movie is just J.J. Abrams being J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, but it's like, but I was like, if it were really made deliberately to generate internet buzz by by taking out details, that's pretty awful. I mean, it makes it less of a decent movie as a standalone piece of entertainment, and it's like, it's kind of like it compromises the art itself rather than diluting the image or name of the art. It's kind of like telling a composer he's not allowed to use the string section of an orchestra.
Mm. Well, I mean, I don't even know where to begin.
I don't necessarily think maybe Disney dictated that, because if you go back and think about it, like when George Lucas made it, he had the intention of selling like toys and products and stuff like that. Maybe J.J. Abrams had this intention.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, you know, well, you also have to think, Lucas was like he was the idea man. You know, right. It was kind of his creative vision, and you know, then I want to say it was Kenner that he sold the toy rights to, because nobody else wanted it, because nobody thought Star Wars was going to be anything. And then it went kaboom. It was kind of like the Beatles. You know, like they went to a bunch of labels and like, no one wants to listen to this pap. And then it's like, oops. Well, what was the Beatles' name before they became Silver Beatles.
Silver. Thank you. Thank you.
But yeah, and I was like, it was just a random thought that you know, but that weird like hyper analytical mindset I get into when I'm, you know, when I'm smoking, that I was just like, man, this
when
is
you're
like
smoking your Tronic,
my Tronic, yeah, my Tron. Oh my God, I'm going to hit you.
what the
no, you really, really do deserve to be hit for that. But it's like I really, and it was just like it could be just, you know, just, you know, random fan theory number, you know, 837,000, but it was just an idea, and I wonder if it's true. I'll probably never find out, and I'm hoping that the next films allay my fears in that regard.
Yeah. All right, I don't even know to begin with that discussion, Mug. That was all over the place. but Tron, real quickly, Tron could be viewed through a Matrix lens, is what I gathered from that, and kind of explains a little bit more for you. I don't know if that makes sense.
I don't know. The Matrix was internally consistent, though. Tron was not.
I know.
Tron, like, it's not.
I love the Matrix trilogy. I know a lot of people don't, but I love that trilogy.
Oh my God, I can't stand the Matrix.
I like the first and second movie, and that's pretty much it.
I hated all of them. They all are just...
The original one was okay, and the other ones were awful.
Yeah,
I was never a fan of the Matrix in the first place. Yeah, I thought Dark City first, and I was like, that was not nearly as good as Dark City.
Yeah, Dark City
is good.
Yeah. I like Dark City. That's an underrated movie for sure. Mm-hmm. And then as far as your Star Wars talk, like I just watch the movies. I don't care anymore. You know, just like when people started getting into these big debates about what happened here and all this, I forget that part, and I just
how dare you judge our childhood?
You're raping my childhood.
Right.
There really is nothing more that to gain from at least the first three Star Wars movies or the ones that came out in the 70s. There's nothing more I can even fucking say about those movies.
Only one came out in the 70s, dude.
Well, whatever. 70s and 80s. You know what I'm saying, asshole.
I know that you're an asshole.
You're an asshole, man.
I know that you all have assholes.
I know. Hey. That I am rubber, and I know that you are glue.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. All right, guys, let's go to plugs. Mug, let's start with you, bud.
You can reach me on Twitter. It's at Moria Mug, MoriaMug.
All right. Eric, let's go with you.
You can find me at EricRPG. And I haven't done my LP of Metro yet, but I haven't found time, unfortunately. Hopefully in the next 2 weeks. I am taking Monday off, so maybe I'll do it then.
Freak 5 is exiled.
Get to work on your holiday.
Freak 5 is exiled. All right. Anything else, Eric?
The YouTube channel that you could find at one event silly gets up is Funny T Man. That's it.
All right. Breakman.
at @break_man. At @Mrs_Break_man if you like Yankee Candles. Because I think that's all she talks about.
There's something I did forget to mention.
God damn it. I knew it.
I knew it too.
It's always something.
The Trails of Cold Steel review for the Legend of Heroes game. That's up on BostonBastardBrigade.com.
All right.
Go ahead and read it, please. That's it.
Okay. Breakman, anything else?
What were we talking about again?
Plugs.
I'm just kidding, Eric. No, that's it. That's all I have.
I want to thank Victor Ireland for taking the time to talk to us for what amounted to over a half hour.
I know, dude. You guys have got to get him to come in like co-host and warn him.
Yeah. No.
Give him more warning.
I have to say that pre-recorded interview gave me plenty of time to whack it while he was gathering.
Oh, my God. Whacking.
Please get him the co-host, but warn him because
because Mug's on the show. I'll warn him.
Because not safe for work times 20 when me and Maury are around.
So special thanks to Victor Ireland.
All right.
Let me see. Cunt, whore, slut, bitch, fucking cocksucking. Motherfucker.
Tell us how you really feel about the Pittsburgh Steelers, Brakeman.
Yeah, I wonder if he's a raging alcoholic that swears a lot.
All right. That was an old Monty Python thing. I don't know. It may have been one of the ones they did for one of their movies. Yeah. But it's like, you know, we'd like to say that this record contains no cursing of any kind except for four cunts, one clitoris, and a foreskin. And since they're all in, and since they're all in this special exclusive introduction, you're past them now.
Yeah. All right. I want to thank Victor Ireland for coming on the show for what was about over half an hour interview. We really appreciate it. Please check out Gaijin Works online. Order up some of Night 5 so we can get some
Actually,
of Night
6. Actually, you can't
God
order it from
damn
the
it! One of these days, I'm going to get through my plugs without anybody saying anything, and it's going to be a
glorious
day.
You won't get through them without being interrupted if Eric comes.
One day, you'll get through them without being interrupted when the three of us aren't around.
Yeah, probably, man. Maybe when I'm dead.
I just wanted to tell you, you can't actually order from Gaijin Works. That phase is past already.
Okay, whatever. Support Gaijin Works, please. Everybody, support Gaijin Works. We definitely want to get some of Night 6 over here, so any way we can. Maybe the next game. What is it? What's the next game?
It's Class of Heroes 3.
Class of Heroes 3. Buy Class of Heroes 3. So.
I think they're also doing 3G for the PlayStation 3.
Yeah. Dungeon Buster says, would Tronic Man accept a terrible towel if you got it as a gift? That's awesome.
The what?
No.
The terrible towel?
No. No.
What is the terrible? Okay, hang on. What is the terrible towel?
It's too much for now, man. Let's we'll
next week.
It's the rallying cry of my mortal enemies, the Steelers.
Yeah.
The J.K. Rowling cry?
Yeah, the J.K. Rowling cry. Okay, everybody. Thanks for joining the show. Everybody in chat, Dungeon Buster, Freak 5, Chaos, Gripper 01, and finally MXT was in there posing as Umatsu. So thank you all for joining chat. We want to see you back here next week. Everybody out there, please join us next week. We're going to have another fantastic show. Till then, stay safe, everyone. We want to see
No,
you
there
back
will
next
not
week.
Be a Grinder's Dance Party.
Oh, my God. No
DDT. And wait, guys, this was the first episode of the year when we're all together.
Yeah. Oh God, what a train wreck this is. All right, guys. I don't know what's worse, losing a trio of fantastic entertainers or doing this show, the first show of the year, man.
If you were to stop doing this show, you would lose a trio of fantastic entertainers.
Get out of here. Yeah, me and my myself and I. There you go.
No,
that's what
no.
I would lose.
Yeah, I know that you may that you are so full of yourself. You may think you have three of you in you, but no.
Here,
I mean, me.
Hey, haven't
Brake,
you ever heard
and
the
Eric?
The Trinity, the Holy Trinity, that's just me, buddy. You know, it's all one person, man. That's it.
Well, you are old.
Like to say that Freak 5 Chaos agrees with you in chat. He says, yeah, Frank came back and the show was a train wreck.
Get the fuck. And then, you know, right before that, Dungeon Buster says, epic show. So there you go. All
yeah,
thanks
and,
to me.
And then, yeah, Freak 5 bringing the truth.
Get out of here. All right, y'all. Stay safe. We want to see you back here next week. Until then, we are out.
Ow. You suck. It's Footloose.
I don't want to go out. Never
not dancing in the streets.
But now I want to hear Footloose.
Everybody love Footloose.
To the church on time.